New Realities is dedicated to exploring evolving human potentials in an evolving world. This series explores the idea of how to become more conscious beings. We present programs that invite the viewer to look at automatic behaviors and take free rein of their body, mind, and spirit so that we can hope to inhabit and create a better world. My name is Maria Morelli, and our host this evening is Phil Gruber. Phil, we'll let you introduce yourself. Phil is sitting in for our host, Alan Steinfeld.
Yes, I'm literally sitting in for Alan tonight. What can I tell you about myself? Well, I could tell you that Phil Gruber's passion, enthusiasm, his kind spirit, his sparkling wit and intelligence has made him a much loved and highly respected speaker on the international scene. He has spoken at the UN, and he's working on his first two books. His first CD, a collaboration with Laraji, has been out a while now. It's called The Song of Indra. It is really some beautiful music, which I'll talk about later. You heard a little bit live when we first got on the air. Also, Phil has a way of taking very sophisticated, sometimes very complex and detailed information and really making them understandable. He uses humor, certainly. He has a style that's graceful, easy, patient, but most of all, humor. He's known for his angelic harp music. He's a healing facilitator. And he's just an all-around regular good egg, if you ask me.
And he's speaking about himself.
Yeah. I mean, I am a pretty good authority on myself, although there are people out there that think they know me a lot better than I know myself, and I give them some latitude every once in a while. But I do think I know myself pretty well.
Why do you speak about yourself in the third person?
Why do I?
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you a certified psychotherapist? Should I be telling you this? Does it matter if you're certified or non-certified? I don't know.
Okay. You got it.
Why do I think about, I don't know, what is the third person again? Tell me what the third person is all about. That's when you describe yourself as the other. Well, you see, the moral there is that there is really no separation, you see.
Yeah.
So I am me, and I am the other, and I am the other and another. You see, I am everything, and everything is me. Like, you are everything, and everything is you. You know? You
are everything, and everything is you.
Except in my case, as my sister would tell you, that I changed the lyrics a little bit to say, everything is me, I am everything, and everything is me. She always goes, Phil, it's always about you. And I go, well, yes.
Shouldn't it be?
It should be. It should be about all of us, and there really is no separation. Let me tell you, probably the best thing that was ever said about me, my mother came to see me speak in Florida several years ago. God bless her. Triple bless her. And after the lecture, she stayed for the whole lecture. A lot of people came up to me and congratulated me and whatnot, as they usually do. And on a great lecture, by the way. And my mother came up to me and she said, I said, so what did you think, Mom? Because it was really important for me to have my mother come in. She still doesn't really understand what I do. I talk to her on the phone every so often. I call her in Pompano Beach. She says, Phil, when my friends ask me what you do, what do you do? And I basically start out by telling her that my passion, enthusiasm, kind spirit, sparkling wit, and intelligence makes me a very well-respected and highly loved speaker on the international scene. That's about all I can say. But I asked my mother, what did you think about the lecture? And she said the best thing that I could possibly imagine. She said, quote, I didn't understand a word you said, but you looked happy.
Oh, that's great.
And that's the nicest thing anyone has ever said to me. Yeah.
That's sweet.
And now I got off the subject. Now I can't remember what I was talking about.
I don't think we started to talk about anything. So.
No, we really haven't started talking about it. Oh, I know what it was. We were talking about that I refer to myself in the third person, that I refer to myself as the other. Well, I don't see really any separation because, seriously, folks, there's a word in the Greek language. It's called pathos. It's P-O-T-H-O-S. That word is a very, very important word. For me, certainly, it means that sense of longing, a deep, deep, deep longing. I think this sense of longing is what a lot of us have, regardless of who we are, our upbringing, the way we were brought up, socialized, the way we were conditioned. A lot of us feel on many, many levels, not just these existential levels, we feel that on many levels we're orphaned. Even though we may still have parents that are living, we feel on a lot of spiritual levels that were orphaned, we feel this sense of longing. I think this sense of longing is this primal sacred wound we look to heal each and every time we incarnate on the earth plane. I feel that a lot of us feel that we feel that we're somehow separate from parts of ourselves, separate from each other, separate from God, that we feel that as the result of a fall, perhaps we were cut off, cast off, sent down, exiled from a pre-existent state of grace, you know, what a lot of people call the fall of man, what a lot of people call that fall from paradise, from heaven, from Tara.
What they're forgetting.
Lots of different names, yeah. And there is that sense of forgetting. We want to remember who we are, because not just these great Gnostic writers, they wrote that knowledge of ourselves teaches us whence we come, where we are, and whither we are going, that we come from God and we are in exile. And I'm like many teachers out there and facilitators who are trying to remind people, helping people to remember that this exile is about to end, that we are being given an invitation that we haven't had for a long time. We're remembering a covenant we made with ourselves so far back in our pre-ancient history that only dim traces remain in our collective memories as myths, legends, and fairy tales. We're trying to remember ourselves. We're trying to bring it all back together. We're trying to heal that wound that I think is the cause of all human disease and suffering. I think it's the cause of all human disease and suffering. It's that sense of separation that somehow we feel separate from that collective, that larger collective, that unified field of consciousness and energy, that whole collective of consciousness that gave us life, that birthed us into this world that many people would call God.
The source.
The source, all that is, Tekash Lawankantanka, Britney Spears. I mean, whatever represents for you. And listen, you know, there are a lot of people out there that really do think that Britney is the wholeness of consciousness as we understand it. And maybe for them at that time, Britney does represent all that is, but certainly
a cut-off aspect of themselves.
And certainly, you know, that we will grow in time to so include Christina Aguilera, you know, and they'll expand their perception or their, you know, feeling of what the wholeness of consciousness represents to them. Everything is a bridge to something else. We, as we evolve, as we grow in time and timelessness, we start to bring more into our perceptual field, and we start to. Our paradigm enlarges. We start to bring more consciousness into our lives. We're able to access more consciousness. And with more consciousness comes more power. And with more power comes more responsibility to use our consciousness more responsibly. That's what the ring and the Lord of the Rings is really all about, the ring of powers, how you use what you've been given. Mm-hmm. More is coming into our perceptual range. We have more consciousness available to us than any time in our history. And so with more consciousness gives us more dimensions of a situation to look at. And with that hopefully comes more compassion and less judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is that love and judgment simply cannot process through the body simultaneously, just as love and judgment can't process through the body simultaneously. So hopefully when you are in less judgment, you're more compassionate, there is less judgment. Because I think self-judgment, self-recrimination, you know, this self-judgment is really, they are blocks, really, to our movement, I've always said, is always towards grace. And really what blocks that movement forwards, our evolution, is our own thoughts. Disharmonic thoughts really that don't honor our intrinsic, indelible, eternal relationship with that one source of all things, again, which many people choose to call God. I certainly do. The great mystery, Wangantanka, source, as you said, all that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we grow and evolve, we're able to bring in more compassion. We're able to look again at more dimensions of the situation, and this is very, very, very important, because the world, you know, if we want to see, let's say, an end to terror in this world, we have to stop terrorizing ourselves. We have to start initiating a process, a condition that many of us know as this thing called karma, which is really a condition manifested as a crystallization of disharmonic thought forms. Disharmonic thought forms is really any thought that doesn't honor that relationship with God, and any thought, like every thought we've ever thought, we're thinking now, we ever will thought, will crystallize in the DNA. One of the secrets is that the DNA is a crystallization of thought forms, just as we are crystallized thoughts. We are eternal thought forms in the mind and heart of God. And what people really have to understand, especially people that are listening to the show, you're already in tune, you're already in the flow, but it's important to understand that every single thought we think manifests in our lives, manifests through our experience, through the experience of God that we are in this world, through our physiologies. We are the content of our DNA. The simple truth is that, and it is a simple truth, that every single thought crystallizes in our DNA, and we are multidimensional holograms. We are the holographic projections of those crystals, those crystallizations of all of our thoughts.
So it's important that we choose our thoughts wisely, what you're saying.
We who are responsible, certainly, for every thought we've ever thought. Most of our lives seem to be more manifestations of our current patterns than our free will choices. We have to learn, we have to free our will, not to be victims of circumstance. This is why I love Jerry Lewis. To tell you quite frankly and seriously, Jerry Lewis is a real icon and a role model to me in a way, because not just because we're from the same, we were brought up actually in the same neighborhood. He's from Newark, New Jersey, so am I. But the reason I admire him so much is because no matter, I mean, think, no matter how zany or crazy he was in all of his movies, he always got the girl. But there's a reason he always got the girl, and that reason is because he had script approval. All of his movies he either wrote or had final script approval. The lesson there is to be the authors of your own life, to be the authors of the auteurs, the same word, auteur, author, and arthur, to be the authors of our unique and collective evolutionary destinies, to write our own scripts.
What is the key to really getting at subconscious motivations, though?
Well, the thing is, see, I think we were originally designed not to have anything that escaped our conscious detection. We were designed to be conscious of every thought we generate. Nothing was meant to be veiled from us. Even in our dreams, we were meant to be, we were designed to be conscious and lucid in the dream state, in the astral state. See, because one of the great secrets is that when we dream, when we go off to sleep and dream, when our consciousness detaches from its three-dimensional focus, our consciousness goes into some of the lower astral, some of the fourth, fifth, sixth dimensional bands. What a lot of people don't understand, or they certainly can comprehend this once they relearn this, is that the higher dimensions represent the future, future time. So here's the kicker, that when you go to sleep, you actually, when you dream, you are actually going into the future. You are mingling, you're interacting with future portions of yourself and others. More of the great mystery, you're actually involving yourself with higher selves, higher parts of your own self and others. You are in the future. It's what you bring back from the future. When you have that more elevated, expanded perspective, when you're mingling with the angels and the higher dimensions, it's what you bring back from the future to use in this world. And that's the secret, and that's the great, that's the gift and the grace of this. This is really why we go to sleep. Yes, part of it is for neuro-replenishment, but part of it is to mingle with angels, with future aspects of ourselves. Going back, we were never meant to be veiled from anything. Nothing was ever meant to escape our conscious detection and to be responsible for every single thought we generate, because we are the living embodiments, manifestations, crystallizations of every thought we've ever thought. I mean, just think of it out there. All of you listening to this radio show tonight, you are the living embodiments. You are the crystallized holograms of thoughts you had 2 minutes ago, 2 years, 2 lifetimes ago, and 2 years from now, 2 months, to even 2 minutes from now, if you get good at this, you could be the living embodiments or manifestations or crystallizations of thoughts you're having right now. And given the fact that time is accelerating now on the road to 2012, and considering what's happening on the planet right now, the gap between thought and manifestation is rapidly closing. So we are being asked now, certainly by the higher parts of ourselves, certainly for the people we care about in this world, for ourselves, the people, even the people we don't care about, the people we need to bless. We need to bless everything. if we really understand that there's no separation, we understand that we are blessing ourselves. Just the same as when we curse anything or anybody, we are in fact cursing ourselves because there really is no separation. That is an illusion. And we are responsible for each other to the extent that we're willing to take that responsibility, and we really need to be taking that responsibility now because there's a lot that's hanging in the balance.
How can you explain when you have many, you're surrounded by many people who are in the awakened state, but then there are others who are not. How do you explain why and when someone wakes up from their unconscious patterns of conditioned thought?
Well, people are waking up now. Everybody's waking up in every walk of life. We're waking up it's a dream. We've been living in a dream within a dream. We wander the earth half asleep, half awake, like orphans of a storm. Dorothy and Lillian Gish, D.W. Griffiths. No, really. Everybody's waking up now, and some people are waking up now, and they're really looking for role models. They're really looking for answers. Everybody's looking for answers. Everybody in every walk of life is suddenly looking around and saying, there has got to be more. Is this all there is? You know? And they're really looking for answers. They're looking to really rediscover parts of themselves that they either, when they birth into this world, that they've forgotten. Things are tweaking their memory now.
Mm-hmm.
Things are tweaking not just their past life or parallel life memory. We can learn from our futures. We can learn from our past. As we grow and as we evolve and develop, we're really getting memory of our immediate incarnational family, parallel lives, past lives, even future lives. So it's not only that we can learn from the past, we can learn from the future. If we can bring what's in the future now into our perceptual range. In other words, in this awakening process, and people will awake at different speeds, listen, some people are making quantum leaps in their awakening. Lots of people, regardless of where they were before, even 1 minute, 10 minutes ago, 10 years ago, there's a lot of spontaneous waking up, and a lot of things are tweaking that memory.
Mm-hmm.
Books that are being written now, or books that were written a long time ago that people are rediscovering, not just falling off the shelf. People that are recommending books that they've read, you know, books that they see in
mm-hmm.
the bookstore. They're being kind of almost like guided, almost unconsciously, but there is more conscious coming into it to go to self-help, self-improvement sections, new age metaphysical sections. I'll admit to everybody out there, and I'll admit to you right now, that there was for a great part of my life, I just not just walked past the self-help section, I literally blew by it. And I went right into the metaphysical section. I didn't for whatever reasons, and I know the reasons now. And the reasons were pretty much it was a real streak of arrogance. I guess I felt I didn't need that. The self-help books were for people who, quote-unquote, needed to help people who meditate, people do yoga. And to tell you the truth, I probably could have cut through a lot of the stuff in my life that I wish I didn't had to have gone through if I really just surrendered a little bit, you know, and just sort of got over I was on a pretty high horse, feeling I didn't need what I probably needed most in my life at the time. And to tell you the truth, as I, you know, as the years went by, well, now, you know, I'm sort of like backtracking and sort of reverse engineering a lot of the stuff. I wish I would have embraced more different types of workshops that I ignored, people that were obviously sent into my life that I was obviously guided to, you know, to expose myself to, that really were doing things, talking about things, having seen things that really, really helped them in their spiritual evolution and awakening, that for whatever reasons I was blind to or that I felt I didn't need it. And I really could have saved myself a lot of pain and suffering. And I don't think that suffering and pain is necessary to heal or to evolve. I think if you're not getting the lesson, it's going to come so close to your face that you may not even see it. They try to back yourself off from it for a while. But I think that which we are not healing now or not addressing is coming up. Karmic patterns, I see it all around me, even in my own life. They're accelerating. They're being magnified. All the stuff that hasn't been dealt with, that hasn't been addressed, that hasn't been healed, is coming up.
It won't go away. It just keeps resurfacing until we deal with it, right?
Yeah, first you get these light little taps, little
right.
bumps, like, you know, like, imagine I'm hitting myself very lightly with my knuckles on my head. which I like, hello, hello, duh, aren't you going to get it, you know? And I guess for a long time I really ignored what I needed the most, but that was because of my patterning. And I'm becoming more aware now of my patterns. And I know the origin of these patterns goes so far back in ancient, pre-ancient history, past lives, maybe in innumerable lives, although I think myself and maybe a lot of people, this is quite possible that this is our first life down here. I mean, my inability to navigate, or my challenges to navigate the three-dimensional reality, I think it's possible it could come from just inexperience. Either I haven't been here for a long time, or maybe this is my first life down here. Maybe this is the first time that I've chosen to come to help facilitate this heaven, the union of heaven and earth, the merging of heaven and earth. I think a lot of souls are being called now, and maybe for the first time, or for the first time in a long time, to help facilitate our passage into the next golden age. What a lot of people will call indigos. Listen, whatever you want to call these waves of souls that are birthing in now, that are incarnating now, whether you want to call them indigos, crystals, crystal children, indigo children, psychic children, super psychic children,
what
mythic,
are
magic,
indigo children?
Mystical children, children of today, tomorrow, 2 weeks from now, children, sons and daughters of paradise, children of the violet ray, the gold ray, the emerald ray. I'll give you an example. There's the mothership in prophecies. One of her prophecies goes, the children with the second sight, a natural thing, so that they might grow graceful, humble, and when they do, the golden age will start anew. Now, that's pretty cool. Mother Shipton,
what is that from?
The Mother Shipton prophecies. Now, Mother Shipton lived around the year 1500. These prophecies are very controversial, but the fact remains that around the year 1500, somebody wrote that prophecy. The fact is that what's been long anticipated and long prophesized by many prophets, seers, soothsayers, sibyls, many indigenous native cultures and races is coming to pass, and that's that. Waves of souls are being birthed in now, for no less a mission than to help facilitate this next golden age. And they're commonly called indigos now. And indigos are different, but to tell you the truth is, the line is blurring. It's meant to. What indigos possess now is a very special pattern. It's a DNA pattern that not all humans have at this time, but then when there's a critical mass of indigos on the planet, it will bleed over into the race morphogenetic field of the entire planet. They call indigos the next step or stage in our human evolution, but the truth is it's a step back to what we once were. Because my belief, and the belief of many others out there and in here, is that what indigos hold in their DNA is the pattern of the original angelic human race. Because what I believe is that, and many people do, and it's not my idea, that but I certainly embrace it because I know it in my heart of hearts to be true, that the original human race was a race of angels. The original human race was a race of immortal angelics that were designed for a very fashion, for a very specific reason. And what indigos are bringing back is that original pattern of the angelic human to help us rediscover potentials that have long been latent in ourselves, to help us rediscover the best parts of ourselves, to help us remember and realize what's called our divine potential, our immaculate concept. It's the search for the Holy Grail. It's that quest for the eternal in each and every one of us. We hold the Grail. Every one of us holds the Grail inside of ourselves. It's been the ignorance of its existence that has bound us here for untold eons. And we are here, and I would imagine that most, if not all, the people listening to the show, what draws you to this type of experience and to share in this type of experience is that we are kindred spirits. We are birds that flock together. We are the company of heaven here on earth. We are the what's called the externalization of the hierarchy. As the hierarchy comes to externalize itself, through us comes to know itself through us. This is the time of what they call the descent of the dove, the return of the dove, and that's the descent or the return of the divinity of the Christos, manifesting in each and every one of us. The return of the Christos, the feminine Christos, the cosmic Christ, that inner Christ child manifesting through each and every one of us.
So are you saying that the indigos are here to help us remember our gifts?
Yeah, and this is what has always been possible for us as individuals and as a race. These are divine potentials that we have forgotten through the mists of time. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here to help everybody remember that divine potential. Probably most more than anything else, to help remember love, to help love realize and know itself through us. We are just vehicles that love can be known, that God can know itself through all these individualized expressions of itself, which we are, just individuated expressions of that one collective consciousness. It really is that search for ourselves again. It's really a grail quest. Even the Wizard of Oz, Dorothy's journey, you know, was really the quest to find, to come into that level of spiritual maturity, to find herself, you know, was really, Dorothy actually is an inversion of Theodora. It means gift of God. Dorothy. L. Frank Baum was a confirmed Theosophist. Man, years before he wrote The Wizard of Oz, he was a member of the Ramayana. He was initiated with his wife into the Ramayana Theosophical Society in Chicago at the urging of his mother-in-law, Matilda Jocelyn Gage, who was a famous woman's, who was a famous suffragette who worked with Elizabeth, what were their names again? Elizabeth, Katie Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting them mixed up, but it's amazing that at that time, here in New York, a lot of that was centered, you know, in the,
there's a
spiritualist movement. Theosophists are still going strong. Mm. But you think in even the 1850s, 60s, 70s, towards the end of that century, there was a rise in spiritualism again. And all these people were in these movements together. They were in the free love movement, the emancipation of the slaves, women's liberation, the suffragette movement. You had these same players, you know, in all these movements together. And L. Frank Baum, when you understand his theosophical background, when you read The Wizard of Oz with that knowledge, and not just see the movie, although the movie is very cool too, when you read the book, you understand the book is a massive theosophical allegory. There is more than enough evidence to suggest that a lot of this was drawn off of theosophical teachings and other teachings, mystical, magical, occult, esoteric teachings that he was exposed to, but more than any of them, theosophy. That's for sure.
Can you talk about theosophy?
Yeah.
I don't know much about it. What is it?
Theosophists are seekers after the truth. They are true spiritual seekers.
Well, what really constitute the theosophist thought?
Well, the theosophist thought is really anybody that's on a true spiritual search.
Mm-hmm.
That we're really all in this together. Let me tell you, there really is no... Let me talk, now that we're on this subject, I'll talk about that. Dorothy is an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting enough, like Frodo in the Lord of the Rings, Frodo was an orphan. Even Tolkien himself was an orphan. There is a great orphan, according to Kuthumi Lal Singh. This is a theosophical master teacher, talks about the great orphan. Dorothy is brought into the world of illusion,
mm-hmm,
by a cyclone. Remember? See, a lot of people think that Kansas is what they call samsara, you know, and that Oz is the nirvana, right? But the truth is that Oz, the seductive beauty of Oz, is really the samsara, that Kansas is really the nirvana, you see? And the truth really is that samsara and nirvana are really one and the same, just viewed differently. When we talk about the cyclone that brought Dorothy to Oz in the first place, remember it was because of that little dog Toto. When you look at the tarot, especially the Rider-Waite deck, in many tarot, if not all, most tarot decks, the Fool is always accompanied by a little dog.
Why is
that? Many tarot teachers will tell you that the dog represents the lower, baser natures. The dog is barking at the Fool to remind the Fool of the Fool's lower, baser natures. But I look at that Fool and the dog, and I see that it's a happy dog and a happy Fool. That the reason the Fool can walk so nonchalantly along the edge of the precipice or the abyss, getting ready to enter cycles, let's say incarnation, is that the Fool has no fear because you're always accompanied by all there is. The little dog represents the inner Christos, all there is. We always have everything we need. We always are accompanied in this life by everything we need. We don't have to really even rely on external teachers. That's one of the big teachings of the Wizard of Oz, that you had it within yourself all the time to get back home. You always had this within yourself. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to rely on external teachers. Certainly that can point the way. That turned out to be humbugs. That's why L. Frank Baum called the dog Toto, all there is. It's when Dorothy felt that she didn't have all there was within her anymore or around her, when Toto escaped, this really started her, precipitated the journey to really find herself, to rediscover herself.
All right.
Right?
Yeah.
The cyclone represents the cycle of birth and death. See, it's the cycle, what's called the cycle of the rounds. The cycles of birth and death. You can escape, you evolve past the world of death and illusion, in the world of death and illusion. In other words, that to elevate yourself, to ascend beyond the world of death and illusion, you do it by placing yourself within the world of death and illusion. She begins the journey home, following the yellow brick road, that unwinding spiral, reversing the path of involution, evolving back into her wholeness. Her three companions represent the three aspects of the human personality, thinking, feeling, and will, right?
Mm-hmm.
The three paths of yoga, knowledge, devotion, and action,
mm-hmm.
right?
What about Delinda and the Wicked Witch?
Well, interestingly enough, let me tell you just a little bit about Matilda Jocelyn Gage a little bit more. She was the suffragette, Alfred Baum's mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
She became a member of the Theosophical Society in 1885, and she shared a book called The Path with Baum and Maud, his wife. They read Isis Unveiled. They read texts on esoteric Buddhism. They joined the Theosophical Society in 1892. Again, its members, quote, search after the truth. He read The Astral Plane by the famous Theosophist C.W. Leadbeater. The name, the suffragettes, Mary Matilda Jocelyn Gage's mother-in-law, the one who introduced him to Theosophy, by the way, co-authored with Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, The History of Woman's Suffrage. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Theosophists, in Theosophy, there's what they called a philosophical basis to equality. Oh, also, The Devaconic Plane by Leadbeater, Frank Baum also wrote. In The Devaconic Plane, or the astral plane, it's stated that after death, there's a period of what's called quiescence,
mm-hmm.
a state of undifferentiated consciousness. This is the Pleroma. This is the Devaconic Plane. This is paradise, you see. This is what actually Kansas represents. L. Frank Baum, who wrote The Wizard of Oz, knew this. It was a little trick he was playing on his audience. Because, you know, when he got the idea to write The Wizard of Oz, he said it came out of the blue.
Mm.
He wrote it for the golden child in each and every one of us, and always to remember that things are not what they seem. One of the great theosophical classics, I'm reminded, is Mabel Collins' Light on the Path, where it says, desire only that which is within you, for within you is the light of the world. See, in Wizard of Oz, you have Kansas as this dull, gray, flat, colorless, featureless landscape, you know, And Oz is a vibrant, colorful adventure. It's the world of imagination. But it really, and fantasy, but that's really the samsara. That's really the lure, you know, of the world of illusion, Oz. Because the second she gets to Oz, she really wants to go back to Kansas. She wants to go back home.
Well, she realizes it's all a fraud because Oz was the terrible man behind the curtain, right? Pretending.
Exactly.
To have all the answers.
It's paying attention to the man behind the curtain. It's the quest to return to that state of undifferentiated consciousness, nirvana. Oz has a central green area, the Emerald City. That's the heart. See, the yellow brick road represents the path from the mind to the heart. In a way, yellow is the color that represents the mental body. All the dimensionalized levels of our consciousness have colors, wavelengths associated with them. The mental body, third dimension, is yellow. And you take that path, again, that path of involution and evolution, back from the mind to the heart. It's always a journey back to the heart along the yellow brick road, the golden spiral. You see, Oz ultimately represents, it's a mandala. It represents the samsara, that beautiful, enticing, frightening world of becoming and differentiation, where we become these individuated expressions of God, that seductive world of earthly beauty. It draws the soul to it. Kansas is the world we have come before we find ourselves in what's called the perilous land of the separate self. Kansas ultimately, and the truth of it is oneness. Kansas is like the word cancer, by the way, and Kansas means song of sadness. So isn't it interesting that cancer, in a way, too, is like a song of sadness? Kansas is that permanent world of oneness from which we've all come and to which we are all destined to return. If we can heal our thoughts and elevate our thoughts, right now we're in that period of time. Stargates are opening. We're being bathed in higher dimensional frequencies, you know, preparing us for this road to 2012. We and the planet are being conditioned to expand our morphogenetic field. Our DNA is being upgraded because when 2012 comes, when that heliacal rising of the sun on the winter solstice of December 21st, when we align ourselves with not only the galactic equator, the galactic center, our sun is going to be in direct alignment with that. We all are going to be, by extension, the Earth, the Moon, the Sun, the whole solar system is aligning not only with the galactic equator, but with the galactic center. It forms a great cross. So the sun, get it, is being hung on a cross. Where have you heard that one before? The sun will be hung on a cross. Why? For our redemption. Because right around the time of 2012, this planet, we are going to be bathed in superluminal light that can really take us to our next stage of evolution, to really merge and be in union with the sons and daughters of light, the B'nai Or, the B'nai Elohim. In the Hymn of the Pearl, the great Gnostic Gospel, it talks about the lost body of the garment of light, that the Prince of Peace sees in the angel of light his true reflection. In other words, there's a version of ourselves preserved for us in the higher heavens, our angelic bodies. When we come into that rare and precious alignment with the galactic center and the galactic equator, of course we have to pass through an interstellar cloud of gas and dust called the Black Road or the Crossroads or the Dark Night of the Soul, where we have to really go. And it's not a dark night of the soul, as it's really where we have to go to the underworld. We have to go deep within ourselves, like Dorothy's journey to Oz, where she found Glinda, who, by the way, in the book is the Good Witch of the South. You see, she went from Kansas to Oz. She ended up, she started out in the east. She went to Oz in the center. Then she went to the west, back to the center, and then down south, because she had to go deep within herself. And actually, when you connect the lines of her journey, it forms not just a triangle, but a tetrahedron, which is the simplest crystallization of our thought forms. It's the elementary volumetric solid, platonic solid. It is the true architecture of our existence. The first verse of Genesis really reads, in the beginning, God created a six-edged thorn. It's in the shape of a tetrahedron, because if the Torah is really a blueprint of creation, it's going to start with the basic crystallization of the thoughts of God. How's that so far? I'm going to take a breath.
That was great, Phil. You had, wow.
Things are never what they seem. Dorothy is already home. We are already home. Where are we going, ladies and gentlemen out there? Always home. Dorothy, like we are, we're the gifts of God. We're the soul sent from God, from Kansas to Oz, and then from Oz back to Kansas. Okay, get it? Oz and Kansas. Everything is okie-dokie. You know, there's so much we can say about this. And no, we don't have all the time in the world. There are websites you can go, theosophical websites, where there are articles written about theosophy in Oz. Just to go, just a few more of them. Cyclone represents a great circular wind.
Mm-hmm.
The circle, the coil of the serpent, the cycle of necessity, the round of birth and death. Toto is a little beast who distracts us, or who really distracts us to get us back on the path. We get caught up in the cycle. The scarecrow represents thinking. Manas, the mental body. Tin Man represents feeling. Kama, the emotional body. The lion represents doing, what's called sthula, sharira. That's the physical body developed. See, we need to develop courage, purity, and intellect. And in the book, The Scarecrow and the Tin Man debate what's more important, the brains or the heart. And in Blavatsky's Voice of the Silence, there is the two paths in which the intellectual doctrine of the eye is compared to the compassionate doctrine of the heart. You see, the route that Dorothy follows is that inverted triangle, the triangle of matter, the tetrahedron. And the yellow brick road strongly suggests the path, which in Tibetan is Lam, the mystic way. the Lamb of God, the path of God, or the path to God. Why is it that when you escape from prison, they call it going on the Lamb, or
right.
being on the Lamb? That's the path. Theosophy answers all this. In Theosophy, it says there is a road steep and thorny, beset with perils of every kind, that leads to the heart of the universe. See, the Wizard of Oz is really this huge, wonderful theosophical allegory. When you get to the Emerald City, when you get to the Heart of Hearts, emerald green is the color of harmony, balance, the fourth, or the harmonizing ray. We can go on. There's a lot we can say about the Wicked Witch of the East and West, the desire for birth, the fear of death.
I'm waiting for you to talk about the red slippers.
Well, the red slippers, red is the color for usually for female initiation, and slippers can represent authority. Interestingly enough, in the book, they're silver.
They are?
Yeah, because L. Frank Baum wanted you to know that there was something beneath our feet, that if we know how to use it, we can get back home. And there is a silver disc of light below our feet that goes by many, many names.
Why?
That holds not just the pattern of the 12 strands of DNA, all the electromagnetic codes, but it holds that original angelic pattern, our original pattern of perfection. And the Grail, and many people understand the Grail can be a silver disc or a silver plate. Well, there is one of those silver plates or discs below our feet. So there are many, many, many levels to understand the Wizard of Oz. But one of the main things, I think, and on that road to 2012, that dark night of the soul, when Dorothy travels south to meet Glinda, the good witch of the south, is to go deep within ourselves. We've got to heal our thoughts. Again, it all goes back to our thoughts and the healing of our thoughts, and to understand that all of our thoughts crystallize, that we are the crystallization of all of our thoughts. So when we can exalt and elevate our thoughts to having thoughts, more thoughts, certainly thoughts, no thoughts that isn't devoid of an understanding of the sacred of all things, that the sacred is in all things, to see every act as an exercise, and everything we do is an exercise in ecstatic fulfillment, then our lives, our bodies, our physiologies, our physical chemistries will be the projection of those elevated higher thoughts. Again, we're being given an invitation for the first time in a very long time as a race to take our place among angels as allies and as equals. And all the teachers we find outside of ourselves, like the wizard, can be humbugs. And that's the cardinal message of Theosophy, that the teacher can but point the way. Self-reliance is the key. In the book, interestingly enough, when you're in the Emerald City, you have to wear green glasses. But there's no need to wear the green glasses. You're already in the Emerald City. I think the green glasses, according to Baum, represented religious dogmas. The green, it really is green. You don't need the green glasses to see the green of the Emerald City. That you don't need the dogmatic approach. And I think this is a time when really the prophecies about maybe the reconstruction of the church, 2,000 years ago, a vision was returned to us of an ecumenical, egalitarian church, a church of love based on a gospel of love, and I think that will be restored. I think that is the promise. That is the gift of our creation to help restore that. The true meaning of the Christos, you know, the inner Christos, to really be the fullest expressions of divinity that we can be, to really see the sacred in everything, to realize that we are all those individuated expressions of that one collective consciousness that we can choose to call God, you know? And remember, what powered the wizard's balloon? What powers any balloon? Hot air.
Right.
Right? So, so what do you think about that?
Are you talking to me, Phil?
I am talking to you. You're the only one.
I'm still thinking about it all. I'm amazed. I had no idea all that was in The Wizard of Oz.
It's all
okay, what about the little, was it the Munchkins or the little people, you know, Glinda's friends?
Uh-huh.
What were they, elementals or something?
Munchkins can represent the less evolved parts of ourselves, the childlike parts of ourselves, but it's important to understand that we really do have to return to not being children, but that childlike quality. Hey, listen.
Right.
Why is the enduring appeal of The Wizard of Oz? Why is the Harry Potter books and films so popular? Why the Lord of the Rings books and films? I think we're all looking to recover what Tolkien himself called the Silmarillion. That's the radiance of pure light that we've always known ourselves to be. We're looking to recover that awe, wonder, and mystery that we knew as children.
Right.
You know, we're looking to recover those childlike parts of ourselves. Again, not to be children, but to retain that childlike quality, to see the universe in drops of water or grains of sand, you know, to see elephants in blades of grass. This is what we're looking to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're really looking to each other for this. We really, you know, those of us that didn't get the love, support, and encouragement that we really needed when we were growing up, I think we really need to give that to ourselves now. We're all in this together. I think we've all asked to be here. I'm sure that we don't always get to be here. I do think that most, if not all of us, choose our parents, but I've also said that I think we can make the wrong choices or not go with our original choices. You know, we do the best we can down here. We don't always get it right the first time. Lord knows I don't always get it right the first or second time. A lot of us don't make it down here. If we as souls, if we want to start the process of fetal integration, if we feel our mother's womb, we start the process of fetal integration, and we feel that we really can't birth through our mothers, that it will harm our mothers, or we won't be able to birth fully through after we've come into fetal incarnation, we will turn back. Here on the earth plane, that's manifested as stillbirths, miscarriages, abortions. The process of fetal integration has already started, but again, many of us, especially incarnating indigos, don't feel that our mother's morphogenetic fields can hold, can take all that energy that's coming into them. We want to birth fully through into this world. We want to fulfill our contracts. If we feel and we really want to be here, sometimes we will take the chance, you know, of maybe forgetting why we came here. And most of us do forget the reasons we came here when we birthed in, but we're all beginning to remember. We're all beginning to remember the true meaning of freedom. We're all beginning to remember the true meaning of love. We're all beginning, like I said before, to remember potentials that have been possible for us as individuals and as a race all this time. We're here to help us, all of us, rediscover the best parts of ourselves. And the Wizard of Oz is a wonderful allegory for that search of discovery again, that search of self-discovery, discovering really who we are, where we came from, why we're here, where we're going. Again, self-knowledge is the key.
Know yourself. Know thyself.
Know thyself. Know thyself and thy parts. Know thyself and thy composition. Know thyself and thy history. Know thyself and our ability to be expressions of love, that love can know itself, to be virgins again, to be souls that are receptive to the full influx of God's grace. And that is really the original meaning of the word virgin, a soul who is receptive to the pure influx of God's grace. And that Holy Spirit, the only thing that can block that is our own thoughts. The only thing that can block our forward movement into grace is our own thoughts, our own disharmonic thoughts. It's to catch ourselves and decide, make a conscious choice to come from a higher place, a more elevated place. Again, we may not get it right the first, second, or even the third time, but we still get in there. We still keep plugging, and we are going to do it in what's called the realms of illuminated truth. Everybody out there, just close your eyes for just one moment. And I will tell you that in the realms of illuminated truth, our victory is assured. What we have to do, we have that intention, and we have to follow that intention up with the words, the thoughts, the deeds, the actions, the feelings, the emotions that carry the truth of that intent. And that is, that, like Michael Beckwith said in The Secret, that is what I know for sure. And then we can take the place, our place among the angels again, as allies and as equals. This is the path of grace. This is the destiny of joy each and every one of us that come into this world to really manifest. And to develop that, we do need the qualities of courage, of understanding, of knowledge, all the things that are spoken about in the Theosophical teachings, all the things that are mirrored in the Wizard of Oz, all the things that the indigos, and everyone is here to help to teach each other. It's not just the indigos. Anyway, the line between indigos and non-indigos is blurring. We're here to learn from each other. We're here to give each other the love and support and encouragement that we may not have gotten when we were children or even adults. We're all in here together. We're all here to help each other, to learn from each other, to be teachers, to be way showers. You know, whether it's in the workplace or in whatever your relationship is, you know, to be lovers, co-workers, friends, healers, healing facilitators. Everything, everyone and everything has something to teach us. And we just have to just start by being open and willing and receptive to all the gifts of the Holy Spirit. All this stuff is coming in now. Again, the only thing that blocks it is our own thoughts. When we remove the final obstacles, then we will know ourselves in the fullest expression of bliss, of love, as the fullest expression of love, of bliss, of happiness. Everything is an expression of love. Love is like that white light that goes through the prism and breaks into all the colors of the spectrum. It goes back into that state of undifferentiated consciousness, that nirvana, where we know that everything and everyone is an expression of love. And when we begin to treat ourselves and each other and the world as the simultaneous expressions of the divine, we will see that by magnetic backflow, the God force will lovingly return the favor, as it always does. You know, that's the golden rule. That has always been the golden rule, and it always will be the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I think that's it.
That's it.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know? So we're back. Alan, are you with us now? No, okay. Alan is always with us in spirit. Everything is spirit.
Yeah.
I really want to thank Alan for giving me the opportunity to co-host here. I know his spirit is coming through here, as it always does. So we were going to take calls tonight. I'd love to come back. We were going to take some calls. Can we take one call? No, I don't think so.
We have like 3-4 minutes left. So.
Okay. So just in these last couple minutes, is there anything else you'd like to ask that you would like to know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Tell us more about the film you were in, Indigo.
Well, Indigo Evolution, the first movie about the Indigos, was a movie called Indigo. The second one was the Indigo Evolution, which was a wonderful, wonderful documentary. I think it's an important bridge in helping people understand really what's happening on the planet now, because I really believe when you understand more about who and what these Indigos are, you understand more what's happening on the planet. And when you understand what's happening on the planet, then you understand why the Indigos are coming in now and why it's so important. Listen, there are moments that are caught and crystallized that remind us that the heavens are changing with respect to a new Earth. You can access what's available in 2012. You can access that now. If your consciousness is expanded enough to bring into your perceptual range, into your consciousness, what normally exists in most people's futures. The future is now. Time is simultaneous, and the point of power is always in that present moment. When Santa Claus comes down the chimney or the central channel to leave what under the tree? Presents, right?
Right.
What does he say? He says, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho,
ho, ho is an acronym, not as Don Imus would have you believe. Ho, ho, ho is an acronym for harmony and order. It's all about harmony and order. Harmony and order. Harmony is about how things fit. We're looking to make things fit into our lives. When they don't fit, you know, we try with that really rears ahead in our lives, and we try to understand how to make the things in our life fit. That's what harmony is all about.
Very well.
Seeing where we fit in this world in our lives. We're looking for greater meaning and purpose and significance in our lives. And anything that we can do to bring in more love, more harmony. Like, this is why I teach courses in sacred geometry. This is why there's a beautiful conference next week, Awaken to the Divine Feminine in New York. If you'd like information, go to www.CelticMysticalJourneys.com. The amazing Finbar Ross is bringing an amazing faculty featuring Margaret Starbird, who is Dan Brown's main influence and inspiration for the Da Vinci Code. This is the awakening to the Divine Feminine. This is the awakening of the sleeping beauty that has slept within each and every one of us. This is an amazing faculty, an amazing series of lectures, an amazing weekend that Finbar is bringing to New York for the very, very first time. I think this is so meaningful, so significant, this conference. It's about all of us. This bringing in more of this divine feminine energy so we can be balanced, so we can achieve that alchemical marriage, that hieros gamos, that inner Christos, that is that inner Christ child, that is this yearning, beckoning to emerge within each and every one of us. This is what I mean about bringing things into our lives that give our lives more meaning, more significance, more purpose. We're looking for things that really, these are the most pertinent and perplexing questions we always ask ourselves. Who are we? What is our purpose here? And conferences like this, they help us answer those questions. And we are all, and the world is the better for it.
Thank you. I'm glad you brought that up, that conference. Thanks.
I am glad, too.
And we better wrap things up. So would you like to bring some more love and harmony into the show by ending with some more music on your harp?
Yes. Where did my harp go?
I don't know. I think you were caught up in a cyclone over there.
I had my
harp.
Oh, here's
Dorothy.
My harp. Okay.
And Toto.
It was on my lap the whole time. You wouldn't believe how many things I've ignored sitting on my lap. Until they weren't there anymore. And then I had to imagine that they were. Okay, here we go. We're going to bring it home. Thank you, everyone, for listening out there. God bless each and every one of you. And Godspeed in your journeys into wholeness and our inevitable return to innocence.
This has been New Realities, and
that's
thank you.
www.CelticMysticalJourneys.com. Next weekend, Awaken to the Divine Feminine. Here in New York City at Jody Sirota's Meta Center.
Thank you.
Don't forget to tune in to New Realities.
New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. Thank you very much. Every Sunday night at 9:30 on BBS Radio. And for comments and questions, email newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you.